Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, on this program, we always like to talk, or often at least like to talk, about nature and wildlife and enjoying the outdoors. Today, we're going to talk about activities of various types of plants and birds and other wildlife and when they take place every year in Wisconsin, or when they don't take place. Stan Temple, our guest today. Stan's a professor emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. He's a senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And Stan, it's great to have you back.
It's always good to be back, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. And one of the things we're obviously going to zero in on is phenology. You have a phenology calendar, and I know we're going to talk about that, but let's zero in on phenology for a bit. Maybe what is it exactly and why is it so important?
Well, phenology is the study of the seasonal changes in natural events.
Yeah.
And people have been monitoring seasonal changes as long as we've been human beings, because it determined when different animals would be available for hunting. It determined when you could plant your crops. It depended a lot on even the movements of human beings with the season. But it became a science, something that people recorded formally, mostly during the 19th century. Okay. There was a huge boom in a sort of a naturalist movement in which people were out observing nature and recording what they had seen. And one of the easy ways to organize your observations of nature is seasonally, as a phenological record, so that you're keeping track of when things happen. And if you do that over time, you get some interesting data.
And there's some interesting connections, I think, between phenology and Aldo Leopold, who you admired very much and have followed a lot of his work and even done a lot of research related to his work.
Right. Well, Aldo Leopold, of course, grew up as a boy during the 19th century. He was born in 1887. And as he was growing up, the naturalist movement had a very formal school program that they advocated around the country. It was called the Nature Study Program. And the nature study movement, this nature study program, encouraged young people to do a couple of things. Obviously, be outdoors, observing nature, but to keep a journal and record what they had observed. And Aldo Leopold took this to heart, and literally from grade school on, for literally his entire life until the day he died, he was keeping journals in which a conspicuous element of the journals were keeping these phenological records.
It's an amazing thing that, and he's really responsible for a lot of what we have today in this area.
He absolutely is. Between 1935 and 1945, he and his students kept really detailed phenological records, both here in Dane County and up in Sauk County at his shack. And after he'd collected 10 years of this information, in 1947, he published a paper that was almost a groundbreaking paper, in that it was one of the first times that anyone had looked at phenological data from the perspective of an ecologist rather than a naturalist.
Okay.
And so it was a really important paper.
So what's the difference there?
Well, as I said, naturalists, people who go out and observe nature and sometimes record what they're observing, but usually they don't take it any further than that.
Okay.
Ecology is more of a science in that it involves making observations, but then treating those observations as data that will be analyzed, looking for patterns in nature, trying to understand nature, trying to understand the interrelationships between plants and animals and the environment.
Talking today with Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Great to have him back as we talk with him about Wisconsin phenology. And they've got a phenology calendar that I'm going to ask him about as well. But I hope you'll join in. I haven't given the number, so let me do it right now. You can call in. Maybe you take notes on the cycles around you. Have you paid much attention to the birds or other wildlife to track their behavior? I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have a question or maybe an observation to share. We'd love to hear that as well. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Let's talk about the calendar for a minute. What have you, give us the background on this calendar.
Well, the phenology, the Wisconsin phenology calendar, is definitely inspired by Aldo Leopold. And I think it's been around now a decade, so this may be the 10th year that it's appeared. There have been a number of partners that have helped produce it over time, the Aldo Leopold Foundation, the UW Extension, Natural Resource Conservation Service, the Friends of Pheasant Branch Creek. A lot of people have contributed over the years, but the idea is to produce an attractive, colorful calendar that fills in what is happening when. And a lot of the information is derived either directly or indirectly from Leopold's inspiration. And I say directly or indirectly, in some cases, Aldo Leopold's dates for things are still relevant, but it's much more important that Aldo Leopold not only inspired a calendar, but he's inspired a small army of citizen scientists over the last several decades to continue keeping these records so they're up to date and we know how these things are changing in response to climate change and other changes in the environment.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful calendar. I keep that a copy of that calendar in my advising office where I advise students, and I use it every day, and it often brings comments from students who are intrigued by it.
And, of course, again, inspiration from Aldo Leopold in the Forest and Wildlife Ecology Department. Every year we have students contribute their observations to our own phenological records that date all the way back to Aldo Leopold's time, back in the 1930s.
Did you mention a theme? Is the calendar have a theme this year?
We've tried to give the calendar sort of general themes each year. This year the Aldo Leopold Foundation is doing the project alone. We don't have any other partners. So this year we focused on a big citizen science project that's happening in Wisconsin right now, and that's the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas.
Yeah.
You've talked about it on your show. So we're kind of tried to link in with the data
sure.
that they're producing, because although it's not a phenology project per se, they are out there collecting lots of information that can go into the calendar. So we've sort of spiced up the calendar with a lot of bird observations that have come from the first round of the Bird Atlas.
That is very cool. Dan in Iron Mountain, Michigan has a comment or question. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I was driving through Eau Claire area last week, and I saw what I thought looked like a ferret, all white coat, really beautiful white coat with just a black tipped tail. And the only response I've gotten from anybody is they think it might be a mink. And I was just curious if you knew what that might be.
I sure do. We have a couple of weasels. Your friend was close, thinking it might have been a mink, but it wasn't. Mink don't change the color of their pelage, their coat. But we have the long-tailed weasel and the short-tailed weasel that both change colors. And we got a couple of other mammals that do that as well. We've got snowshoe hares that change from a brown fur to a white fur. And all of these species that change color with the season are finding themselves in the most uncomfortable sort of bind, because it turns out that the change, the seasonal change in the color of their fur, is determined by day length, by photo period. And what happens now, of course, that winter snow cover, which used to give them camouflage, is coming later in the year after these poor critters have changed their color. So you have white snowshoe hares and white weasels that are now conspicuous as heck against an unsnowy background. And, of course, the same thing happens in the spring. They stay white longer than the snow cover, and it makes them very conspicuous. But I'm guessing if it was large enough that you could clearly see it, I'm guessing it was a long-tailed weasel.
Okay, yeah, it was probably a little over a foot long, and
yep.
The tail was definitely as
yeah.
long as its body, about And it was just a gorgeous creature, though. I'd never seen one before. Very cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. So is it pretty much day length for all kinds of animals and plants in terms of their natural cycles?
It's really complicated, Larry, and that is one of the reasons that phenological data are sort of what we might call messy data, that there are lots of things that can affect the date on which the first occurrence happens. One big one for many plants and animals is photoperiod. The change in day length, of course, is an excellent way for plants and animals to time their seasonal activities because it doesn't vary from year to year. It's very reliable. And plants and animals have taken advantage of that reliability so that a lot of them have various cycles determined strictly by photoperiod. A good example of this might be some of our long-distance migratory birds. They leave Wisconsin and come back in the spring on a calendar, essentially, that's mm-hmm. determined by day length. On the other hand, we also know that climate affects when things happen. So on top of photoperiod, you've got these big long-term changes in climate that can make things occur earlier or later. Layer on top of that, weather. So that occasionally, you know, a weather event will be the precipitating factor for something happening in the natural world. And you can even go further than that and say the timing of the event is going to be different on the south-facing side of a hill than the north-facing side of a hill. And then you throw in the observers who collect the data. And you add, again, all kinds of variability that has nothing necessarily to do with when the event actually happened, but it has to do with when the observer happened to be out there looking for the event. So it's very complicated, and there's a lot of what we would call noise in the system. So it really does require a lot of long-term, extensive data to get the signal out of what might otherwise be considered to be noise.
Dale in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Dale. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. Enjoying the show a great deal, and this is the first time I've ever called in. But I was an adjunct professor of environmental science at UW River Falls for several years, and I had my students do a phenology exercise, and it took the entire semester, so they were doing something almost every day. And I just wanted to let you and your guests know that I had students who enjoyed that so much, they kept doing it after the semester was over. And I had students who came to me the next year and the following year saying, I'm still doing it. It's so much fun.
Isn't that great?
It is. And, of course, I mean, you're basically retelling the story of Aldo Leopold's growing up, too, that he did it when he was in school, and it just stuck. And for all of us who are naturalists as well as scientists, you know, some of those habits that you get into when you're in your formative years, they do stick. And this is a good one.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Dale. Do you keep one, Dale?
Excuse me, say it again?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you keep a phenology calendar as well?
I do. I don't do it as organized as I had the students do it, but I keep doing it, yep.
And, of course, now, if you do keep those records, you can easily upload them to one of the citizen science websites that will add them to all of the other observers who are out there and really makes a very powerful data set.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Dale. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
John from Footballville called to say the ptarmigan is another animal that changes its color according to environment, and some fox as well. Maybe you could talk a little more about that.
Yeah, the ptarmigan, of course, up on the Arctic tundra, needs that camouflage during the winter. And like the other species, the molt from brown plumage in the summer to white in the winter is controlled by photoperiod. And once again, now that we're seeing climate change altering the duration of snow cover, not only here in Wisconsin, but even higher up in the Arctic, these birds are kind of caught in a uncomfortable sort of bind, really, that they end up not matching the background as they were trying so desperately to do so they could avoid predators.
Talking today with Stan Temple, a lot of fun to visit with him today as we talk about Wisconsin wildlife and the phenology calendar that he's been discussing with us. You can join in 1-800-642-1234 with your observations or questions. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. And if you've got a photo you want to post up there as well, a wildlife photo, we'd love to see that as well at the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Marika Suval, our on-air producer today, here on the Ideas Network. Right now, though, visiting about Wisconsin wildlife and phenology with our guest, Stan Temple of the University of Wisconsin. He's an emeritus professor in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and UW-Madison and senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. So great to have him along. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show. Before we go back to phones, you mentioned snowshoe hares, and there's some papers, some new research going on in that area, is there not?
Right. Some of my colleagues here in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology have looked at the decline of snowshoe hares in Wisconsin. Snowshoe hares were associated essentially with the forest north of the tension zone. And as we were explaining, they are getting out of sync with snow cover. And what they're discovering is that this mismatch makes snowshoe hares an easy target for predators. They suffer excessive mortality, and they are now disappearing from the areas of Wisconsin, especially at the southern edge of their range, that don't have as long a snow cover. So these things have consequences.
Absolutely. Emily in Cable, Wisconsin, we'll turn to you. Hi, Emily.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
So the Cable Natural History Museum, way up in northwest Wisconsin this year, our entire exhibit is about phenology. It's called Nature's Calendar.
Oh.
And I'd just like to invite people, if they're interested in learning more about phenology, to come up and experience our exhibit. We have a diorama with our animal specimens for each season of the year and information about the events that are happening seasonally for those different animals.
Yeah, and I spoke at the Cable Museum this year about Aldo Leopold and phenology.
Absolutely. We loved having you, and we had a series of programs in the summer that complemented the exhibit. And it's only up until mid-March, so if you're interested, come soon. And then to complement our exhibit, we also published a phenology journal. So this is the way I like to keep my phenology records. It's a 5-year diary, and each page is a date, and there's space for 5 years' worth of records, and it's a really sort of easy way to get in the habit of recording your phenology events. And you can find a way to purchase that on our website, cablemuseum.org.
Cablemuseum.org. And, you know, it is a lot of fun. Whenever I drive up that way, I try to make it a point to stop at the Cable Natural History Museum. It's a wonderful facility.
And I think it illustrates that a lot of institutions like the Cable Museum, a lot of nature centers, have now embraced phenology sort of once again. A century after it was popular with the nature study movement, it's very popular again, trying to get children to be good observers of nature.
Emily, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Oh, let's go to Max next in Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Max.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
So my grandfather built a cabin up north in 1934, and my uncles now tell me stories about the chemicals they used to use and the pesticides, as well as there used to be just an area in the woods where they'd throw trash, I guess, and stuff like that, and how now that's not being done anymore. They do see a change in the patterns that we're talking about on this program. I wanted to know if do you have any more information about that?
Well, there actually is some scientific evidence that suggests that some of the chemicals that people are releasing into the environment do end up affecting the behavior, especially of animals. It affects their endocrine system, and the endocrine system is intimately involved with a lot of the changes that we've been talking about. So although, for example, the change in the color of the fur of the mammals we've been discussing, mm-hmm. it is sort of ultimately driven by photoperiod, mm-hmm. in the animal's body, that change is actually mediated by an endocrine function. And that can easily be disrupted by a number of chemicals. And a lot of the chemicals, actually, that we've now hopefully gotten out of the environment, things like the chlorinated hydrocarbons like DDT, were well known to have affected the breeding timing for birds. Birds initiated breeding later than they would have expected to under normal conditions. So you're probably onto something there, that they're could be effects of these man-made chemicals on the annual cycles of plants and animals.
Yeah, and maybe the biggest example, or the most noted, or one of the most noted, is that with amphibians, frogs and such.
Yeah, and of course for them, they're particularly vulnerable because they can absorb these chemicals from the water very directly.
Yeah. Well, Jean-Marie in Dodgeville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, from the Driftless area.
Well, good to hear from the Driftless area.
Yes. I'm wondering about these animals who change colors. Do they know what color they are?
Good question. Well, I'm sure they must have some sense of it, because they do try to take advantage of what little snow cover there is. So if you're, say, at the southern edge of the range for snowshoe hares, you'll find that the snowshoe hares will congregate in areas that have whatever
patches
little,
of snow.
Little remnant patches of snow. So, yeah, they're aware that they either
That's
match
a good,
or don't match.
Good observation.
Neat. And would there be any evolutionary change in any of the animals with the climate change going on or not?
You know, that's a big and interesting question. And the problem is, yes, definitely evolutionary change would select against animals that didn't do the right thing at the right time.
Yeah.
But the problem is, we are changing the climate at such a rapid pace that it far outstrips the rate at which plants and animals can evolve responses to them. We're starting now, after decades of climate change, that actually we're starting to see a little bit of a signal that perhaps some plants especially are actually starting to make some shifts. But it takes a long time in comparison to the tremendously accelerated rate at which we're changing the climate.
Interesting.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Rocky and Nishkoro, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me. I was just calling to make a comment. As a child, I was growing up, and my father was telling me he used to live on a farm near Albion, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And he was showing me pictures and telling me that the weather came in a 40-year cycle.
And I said, Did you say four or 40?
40.
40, okay.
And I said, what do you mean, Dad? He said, well, every 40 years, the weather repeats itself, not saying it's going to, on the 25th of December, it's going to snow 40 years later. But he said, as a general. And I said, well, I'm still not following that. And he goes, well, he said, let me show you some pictures. And he showed me pictures. They used to go by the farm he was raised on. And those pictures were, there was a horse-drawn sleigh going up the road. And I said, Dad, why a horse-drawn sleigh? He goes, well, take a closer look. And I looked, and you could see the tops of telephone poles, maybe a foot or two sticking out, and a couple of feet of wire on either side. And I'm going, didn't they plow that? And they said, they didn't have plowed that. But anyhow, in the year 70, winter of 77, 78, we had similar snow tendencies. And guess what's coming up?
Well, you know, you're right in that there are these long-term cycles. And I think here in Wisconsin, we're especially familiar with the El Nino cycle, which has a big impact on our weather. But there are some even bigger cycles on the Earth that have to do with climate change. And the one is the Milankovitch cycle. The Earth wobbles on its axis, and it does so rather slowly. But that wobbling on the axis changes the climate. We're talking on the neighborhood of tens of thousands of years, not 40 years. I'm not familiar with any cycles. You might, with your next guest, Larry, ask them whether there's any 40-year cycle. Definitely you can point to the 4-year sort of El Nino cycle and some of these longer duration cycles that have a sort of an Earth-based
I'll bring that up with the weather guys. So stay listening, Rocky. I'll bring that back up. I'll make a note of it right now. And I've got it. Thanks again for calling. Andy in Mount Horeb has something for us. Andy, hello.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
A couple of years ago, there was an open house at Badger Ordnance up by Baraboo.
Yeah.
And up in the hill, this is not a climate change, but just a very interesting change. There were some reservoirs built up there for water supply. Mm-hmm. And the tiger salamanders, which are terrestrial, except they go in their aquatic in the breeding cycle, they went into these reservoirs, and because of the slick concrete sides, they could not get out. So what happened was, since they couldn't get out, in one generation, they changed from terrestrial to aquatic.
Yeah, this is a plasticity in a lot of salamanders. It's called neoteny. It means that the adults can sort of revert back to what are typically juvenile types of morphology and physiology. Hmm. And in the case of tiger salamanders, of course, the eggs hatch in the water and the young develop in the water. During which time they have gills and can actually absorb oxygen from the water. And in cases like this, we have a number of amphibians that have been able to retain the plasticity, you might say, to retain that juvenile characteristic of an aquatic lifestyle. There's one famous, because it is legendary in Native American cultures down in Central America. It's called the axolotl.
Axolotl.
The axolotl is the indigenous name for it, and the axolotl is just what you described. It is a salamander that has adopted over time a purely aquatic way of living, even though most of the rest of its species is terrestrial.
Very interesting. Andy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We had Larry Leonard sent us on Facebook a photo. He says, we have this tiny salamander crossing the Bug Line Trail near Heartland on Christmas Day. I thought it was a tree branch at first, but it moved.
Yeah, amphibians, they hibernate, of course. And when the animal is hibernating, of course, they can't see day length. They can't experience the length of the day. So they respond very sensitively to changes in temperature. And it's not common, but it certainly happens that on a warm, sunny day, if the place that the frog or toad or salamander was hibernating warmed up enough, that they will emerge. A lot of people see frogs when we have a January thaw. And you were just lucky enough to catch this little plethodon salamander.
And is that salamander going to make it?
Well, I would guess since he's crossing a snowbank, his metabolism is going to slow down rather dramatically. I would imagine a lot of hibernating animals do wake up during the winter, especially hibernating mammals.
Yeah,
people
bears.
Lose track of the fact that when they're down there in their den, they still have to urinate and defecate.
Mm-hmm.
And not wanting to mess up the place where they're going to spend the rest of the winter, woodchucks and a lot of other hibernating mammals will pop up above ground, poke their nose up, see how things are looking, urinate, defecate, and if the weather is nice, they might stay up for a little while. If the weather's bad, go right back under. And I think a lot of that behavior is where the Groundhog Day legend began.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Ralph in Hayward emailed to say that snowshoe hares are doing very well east of Hayward. Mm-hmm. He also reminds us that the Cable Museum used to do a phenology calendar for years and had the unique distinction of using entries from many people in the region on their yearly calendar.
That's true. As I said, phenology is not a new phenomenon. I mean, people have been producing these calendars over time for a lot of different organizations. So bird watchers, I think, in particular, were the ones who were very careful about recording the arrivals of migrants. And virtually every bird book that's ever been written talks about, you know, when to expect a certain species to return on migration.
Let's go back to the calendar. Can you describe the calendar for us? Because it's always, I haven't seen it myself yet, but it's always a beautiful calendar.
Yeah, it features nature photographs that sort of correspond to what's happening during the month. So January, for example, has a nice picture of a red fox hunting in the snow. And for as many dates each month as we have observations, we'll give you a prompt that essentially says on this day, this is the earliest date on which a particular event has ever happened in the history of our phenological data. That's not to say that it's going to occur every year on that date, but that's the earliest date that you could expect to be on the lookout for this event happening. So, you know, right away when you start looking the first week in January, you have a number of things that could happen for the first time. You have a number of our resident birds like cardinals and chickadees that on a bright sunny day will start defending their territories. You've got great horned owls beginning their nesting cycle. During the month of January, quite a few of our mammals actually are breeding so that they give birth later in the spring when the young can benefit from the spring flush of food. So it's really quite, it's not a way of predicting exactly when things will occur, but it will definitely tell you when you ought to have your eyes open for that event. And things really pick up as you get later in the spring. So when you get to April and May, something's happening on
every day
of the month.
Which is pretty cool. It's fun to look at those.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's down the left margin, don't you, there's usually something written as well that's kind of cool.
Yeah, we've featured a lot of Aldo Leopold's quotes this year. And the reason for that, anyone who's read a Sand County Almanac knows that the first half of that book is essentially a phenological record of what Aldo and his family were seeing at the shack. So there is a month-by-month essay describing the events at the shack, and we have essentially extracted some of the quotable quotes from Aldo Leopold. And, of course, the Leopold family continued to keep phenological records, most notably his daughter Nina, who in retirement came back to Wisconsin for her retirement and resumed keeping the phenological records that her father had kept back in the 1930s and 1940s. And it was largely due to Nina's notes that we were able to pick up the very strong signature of climate change in the dates on which things were occurring. Nina and I had an interesting rapport because we both showed up in Wisconsin at the same time. And I have kept phenological records on birds throughout my life. So when I arrived in Wisconsin, I started a citizen science project called the Wisconsin Checklist Project and had hundreds of bird watchers around the state sending me their phenological records. So between Nina and her strong interest in plants and my interest in wildlife, we started a sort of a new tradition in Wisconsin of keeping phenological records.
It's really cool. How do we get a copy of the calendar?
Well, this year, the calendar is produced entirely by the Aldo Leopold Foundation. So it's very easy if you go to aldoleopold.org, go to their website, the first homepage that you'll see, click on the bookstore, And at the bookstore, you can order your calendar. It's also, although it sells out very, very quickly, and I know a lot of stores, bookstores, and other places that had them in stock are sold out. But if you go to the Aldo Leopold Foundation website, aldoleopold.org, you can order your copy.
Well, it's always a great pleasure to have you with us, Stan. And I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun.
It is. Yeah.
It's always fun. Stan Temple, a professor emeritus of the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison, senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And again, what's the site again? It's well, the website again for
AldoLeopold.org.
And I think we have that posted on our Facebook page as well.
I believe you do, yes. Mm-hmm.
We have it as well. So you can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and click on it, and you are going to find out how to get a copy. And I'm pretty sure they get it out pretty quickly to you as well.
I think so.
Thanks, Stan.
You're welcome.
And with Stan, we were talking a little bit about climate, obviously, because of the impact it has on phenology. And we're going to probably continue to talk about climate and take a look at the year in weather with our weather guys coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.